Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I'm very satisfied. I've never been this far in the playoffs. You know, obviously every receiver wants to have, you know, 10, 20 catches a game, but that's not always how the cookie crumbles, and it's not always the most beneficial thing for the team. Force feeding, you know, one guy the ball just for the sake of that. Winning is obviously way more important, and there's many ways to win. You know, we're getting a job done, so, you know, absolutely no complaints from me because that's all I truly want. I mean, I've had it every other way and haven't really reached the pinnacle of the sport. How I would have liked.
Buffalo Bills wide receiver Amari Cooper.
Yeah, but I would like to see him have like 8 catches, 150 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
It'd be really
like,
nice. It'd be really nice. I think it'd be fun because that first game against the Titans when he just came out, literally, Keon Coleman was like, go that way. And he's like, okay. And then he caught a touchdown. It's like, come on. Let's just see that again.
I like that we had the full experience because his first target was a drop. And that was like the whole thing getting up to the game. It was like, just drop the ball a little bit. And you know, and the first pass, it's like it's just a little dump off. Next play, go over there. You got this.
See the field goal post right there? Run towards
just
that.
Run
and turn
that,
around.
That way. I feel like I have been waiting for the Amari Cooper game, but he has had pop plays, including against Kansas City, where with a cast on his hand, because this team in the middle part of the year just all had injured wrists. He just had a gorgeous catch. It's a beautiful throw by Allen. He makes a perfect catch. I think Cooper could have a role in this game. I think, though, it could be more the tight ends and guys like Khalil Shakir. But for more on this game and this Bills season as a whole, we go to the Wester Hotline as Alex Brasky of Batavia Daily joins us today. Alex, how are we doing this morning, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well, guys. Not really much to say here. We're 3 days away from the biggest battle in our professional lives. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, where's the nerve level at for you? Because I was telling our guest yesterday, Aaron Quinn, that for Baltimore, I was way more nervous. I thought I'd be better the day of the game. I only got worse until the final score. Where are you sitting right now?
Yeah, I grew up a diehard Bills fan, season ticket holder, going through hell in the 300 level. I was there for the Pittsburgh Steelers win, using their backups to oust the Bills from playoff contention. I was there for the snow game against the Indianapolis Colts. So I've been through the battles with Bills Mafia in the past. Now, covering the team over the past few years, that fandom certainly has waned a little bit. The passion has gone by the wayside due to necessity and just being so close to the team. But for these playoff games, you definitely start to feel a bit of angst, a bit of anxiety. And you can ask my press box mate at Highmark Stadium, Mookie Hawkins. There were a few times in that game where I was grabbing his shoulder just with the thrilling game that was going on. And it's tough to put that aside, but to answer your question going into this week, I'm trying to maintain a level head, but certainly there is some anxiety there as we get closer to the game in Kansas City.
Alex, I'm right there with you. I mean, I was at the game, and it was very up and down for me, too. There was a nice older gentleman sitting next to me just saying, don't worry, we'll be fine. Dude, same thing happened in the Broncos game when the Ravens scored that first touchdown. But now I'm, like, constantly fluctuating, right? Like, I don't know if you're in the same boat, but parts of the day you feel confident about the game, another part of the day you're thinking about it and you're getting nervous, like, I just need it to be 6:30 on Sunday night, and it feels like it's a whole week away when it's only 3 days away, right? Like, it feels like it's going to take forever to get here. But I think that this game gets so much attention from around the nation, and I think that brings so much more into our heads, right? Like, the fact that it feels like the entire country wants the Bills to win this game kind of amplifies everything for us, right?
Yeah, for sure. Deion Dawkins said it midway through the season. The Bills have turned into America's team of sorts over the years. Now, if you look back to those four straight Super Bowl appearances, I think the national fan base grew sick of the Bills and really wanted to see another AFC team advance to that big game. I think three straight losses was enough for everybody, and then the fourth kind of really annoyed people with the Bills. But after the long playoff drought and with Josh Allen at quarterback, this team has really turned into, I don't want to say lovable losers, because obviously they've been winning quite a bit over the past few years. But, yes, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I think going into this game, not only with the factor of the two-time defending champion Chiefs ripping the heart out of every fan base in the NFL and those fan bases now wanting to see the same done to the Chiefs, but I think it's also just a sense of this team and how that they've grown on the national fan base. I mentioned Josh Allen, Deion Dawkins, obviously an exciting personality as well, and I think this fan base has done a great job being ambassadors for the franchise as well. You see them donate over $80,000 to Mark Andrews' charity after dropping that two-point conversion attempt near the goal line. So I think they've built up a lot of goodwill around the country, and I think this weekend you'll see on social media a wave of support for the Bills in this one against the Chiefs.
Alex, you brought up Deion Dawkins there, and I kind of want to talk about the offensive line all the time with the Bills. I think they're one of the best units in the entire NFL. I think there's a lot of fun personalities on there. Deion kind of just loves doing any appearance he can in season, off season. I've always liked Spencer Brown. I'll always remember I went to that Houston Texans monsoon game in his rookie year, and as like a fourth round rookie, he's doing like year two short to Houston Texans players, and he's just always just kind of been that guy for me. But this unit really in being sort of a rebuilt unit for this year, with obviously the moving on from Mitch Morris, Alex, you tell me, but it seems like all year they've just been fantastic.
Absolutely. I was concerned with the transition that they were going to make up front this year. I think I was one of the few before the season that was a bit reserved in terms of what to expect from a new center and Connor McGovern, as you mentioned, David Edwards at left guard, and losing a veteran presence in Mitch Morris. But, boy, what they've done this season has really been transformative in the running game particularly. I think they've transformed their identity to a more physical, in-your-face, get-after-you, maul-you in the running game mentality when it comes to their offensive line. And I think that starts with McGovern and Edwards, and obviously Alec Anderson bringing him in as a sixth offensive lineman on a regular basis. I think that shift has helped this team tremendously. I'm not saying that what Mitch Morris brought to the table wasn't effective in what he had to offer, but I think what this team needed in this era of Josh Allen leading this team, you needed more physicality up front. You needed the ability to run the ball. You needed more of a balanced offense. And I think it's all started along that offensive line. You saw Joe Brady up for assistant coach of the year, and it makes sense. You often see coordinators get those nods. But I think if there was any time to give it to a positional coach, it was Aaron Cromer. The job he's done over these past few years, not only keeping this team consistent in their performance, but keeping them upright, keeping them healthy, and also being able to transition, like I said, from what they were last year to this year. It's been an incredible job all around.
On the Western Hotline, Alex Braske of Batavia Daily. Alex, you brought up there Joe Brady being one of the finalists for Assistant Coach of the Year for the AP. A coach that I feel like he's had to have won one of these already, he hasn't yet, is Sean McDermott. He still is not getting any credit for Coach of the Year. And Alex, it does frustrate me a little bit. I mean, I said it today that, you know, both on Twitter and on the air, like I kind of almost want the Bills to win a Super Bowl just so he gets some respect. In 2017, he doesn't win it after he ends the longest playoff drought in the sport in his first year. And we're still here. And going into this season, it was a year in transition. It was kind of openly, you know, broadcasted as such. And all they do is win the division first of any team in the league, they're 13 wins again. They could have been 14 if the one seed was still in play. They would have played their starters against New England. All they do is keep winning, and he's just kind of – it seems like a little bit of an afterthought. What are your thoughts on him not even getting a nod for Coach of the Year, where guys like Dan Campbell, who, like, the expectations were to be the one seed and go to the Super Bowl, and he did that. It really didn't change much.
Yeah, if you've followed me on Twitter over the years, I think anybody who's done so is very well aware of how I feel about Sean McDermott. I think it's insane that Sean McDermott isn't up for Coach of the Year this season. I've expressed that opinion on Twitter since really kind of mid-season. I thought that he should have been in the conversation, but if you've looked at sports books throughout the course of the season, he's never really been up there. And I think the five candidates, the five finalists, they're all quality candidates, right? You look at Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions. You look at Kevin O'Connell of the Minnesota Vikings, Sean Payton of the Denver Broncos, Dan Quinn of the Washington Commanders, and Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think when you look at what Payton, O'Connell, and Quinn have done, sure, they are undoubtedly probably the three front runners. Payton bringing the Broncos back from basically the doldrums, Dan Quinn doing the same in Washington, and Kevin O'Connell somehow making something out of Sam Darnold. We saw him turn back into a pumpkin during the playoffs. So I think those three, much more than deserving of a nod in terms of a finalist for Coach of the Year, but Dan Campbell and Andy Reid don't really ring as true to me. Campbell, I'm not sure what people expected from the Lions this season. Now, I know they went through a boatload of injuries. Excuse me. I think that perhaps played a role in the voters' minds. But when you have two coordinators that are now head coaches in the league, it just asks the question, how deserving is Dan Campbell of Coach of the Year finalist honor? And then you look at Andy Reid, a two-time defending champion. I know it's mighty difficult to repeat that success, and maybe that's what the voters pointed to in putting him up there in this top five, but you have the best quarterback in the league, perhaps the best quarterback in NFL history. You have a future Hall of Fame tight end. You have a future Hall of Fame coordinator, perhaps, in Steve Spagnuolo. So I just don't think that Campbell and Reid have done anything to warrant that honor more so than Sean McDermott. You mentioned the changeover that he's had to go through on the roster. Look at the two new coordinators that he's had to help along this year. I know Joe Brady has had a bit more experience, took over midway through last year, but Bobby Babich, a green defensive coordinator, you lose your two starting safeties on the back end who are also captain material over the years, and you've also dealt with your fair share of injuries with Matt Milano missing plenty of time and a few others missing time here and there. So, and that's not to mention the wide receiver position. So if you follow me on Twitter, you know how I feel about Sean McDermott. I don't think he's not only one of the best coaches in the NFL, he's one of the best coaches in sports.
Alex, talking more on coaches, one of the coaches that did get nominated from the Bills, Joe Brady, what do you make of his season here with the Bills? I mean, there's a lot of talk of him getting head coaching opportunities potentially. Do you think, like, what's the vibe if he does leave? And if he does stay, like, how much does this offense evolve next year? Like, what are the two avenues there, I guess, if you want to put it that way?
The job that I think he has the best opportunity to get is the Saints job. I think I saw a report this morning that he will interview with them in person. I think last week you could only interview virtually. I think this week coaches are allowed to interview in person. It's kind of disappointing how the NFL does that, allowing coaches to begin that cycle before the season is all the way through, kind of taking their attention away. But if you heard, I think it was Kellen Moore of the Philadelphia Eagles, I think he's with now. He interviewed for the Cowboys job, and he said, I think the only thing he missed this past week was a fourth grade basketball game for his son or daughter. So I think these coaches do a relatively good job compartmentalizing and making sure that they stay committed to the team that they're currently employed with. But I'm just not so sure the process that the NFL employs is as conducive
to teams that are still alive in the playoffs as it could be, but I guess I digress on that. If you look at the Bills' offense, they've really retooled with three different offensive coordinators with Josh Allen, dating back to when Brian Daboll left. Everybody said that Josh Allen would never be the same without Daboll. And then look at him last year. I know that there were some struggles, but you look at Ken Dorsey now being ousted from his position as Browns offensive coordinator. So I think Josh Allen really made the best of maybe a mediocre hand that he was dealt last year. And then this year, there's no doubt that Joe Brady has done a phenomenal job introducing the running game a little bit. But I think that's also had to do with personnel and who Brandon Bean has brought in and the adjustments that they've made in that regard. So I'm not so sure that Josh Allen is dependent upon an offensive coordinator as much as some may like to think. I think offensive coordinators may be a bit more dependent on Josh Allen's talents. And if you look forward, there are names that have been mentioned in terms of offensive coordinator candidates. If Joe Brady is to leave this offseason, the hot name is Davis Webb, has spent some time here in Buffalo. He's now a quarterback's coach with the Broncos. He's expressed his interest in becoming a coach down the road, dating back to his time playing for the Bills, and I believe he has a great relationship with Josh Allen, and we all know how important that is when the Bills go out and hire particularly a quarterback's coach. And that brings me to the next candidate, Ronald Curry. He's been the quarterback's mm-hmm. coach for the team this season. I think he's another name you have to consider. The relationship that he's built with Josh Allen this year, and I think that would be a relatively seamless transition if you were to go from Brady to Curry.
And I think with Curry as well, Alex, that he was in New Orleans and there was sort of this feeling it was between him and whoever their offense coordinator is now, but they ultimately go with where they went. Curry ends up going to Buffalo. So you could argue sort of the same thing with Joe Brady. There was this sort of, they always had a somewhat of a transition process. I always felt that when they brought Brady in, it was, all right, if Dorsey either gets fired or leaves for a head coaching position, we've got the next guy kind of, you know, right there ready to go and building a relationship with Allen in the offense as we go. Alex, last thing for me, we've obviously spent a lot of time on Bills Chiefs, of course, but the NFC side of things is kind of cool. It's an NFC East matchup. Jaden Daniels has burst onto the scene. The Eagles, I think, are maybe the most talented team in football, but have kind of looked ugly. What do you think about that matchup? It starts our Sunday at 3 o'clock.
I didn't give Washington any chance to win this past week. I thought they overextended themselves in the first round. I thought that they would be relatively satisfied with that, taking into account what they dealt with last year and really the resurgent season they had under Dan Quinn. But I'll tell you what, this Jaden Daniels, he's mighty, mighty impressive. Rookie quarterbacks typically don't fare well during the postseason. He's really turned that narrative on its head. I give them a chance to win this game, but you look at Nick Sirianni's record in the playoffs. I know he's a bit of a fool, and during the regular season there's been some rocky road that they've had to travel. But listen, come playoff time, I know it's a cliche, it's about running the football. They have the best running back in the league in Saquon Barkley. They're a battle-tested roster. Jalen Hurts seems to be unfazed by anything that's thrown his way, although I don't think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in terms of handling the pressure and performing under the bright lights. So give me the Eagles in this game, but I'm going to eat my words from last week. It wouldn't shock me if the Commanders are able to pull off the upset.
Should be a really good game. Alex, man, thanks for jumping on with us this morning. Enjoy the game on Sunday. Hopefully we're talking about a Super Bowl here for 2 weeks, man. Thanks for jumping on with us.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
That was Alex Brasky of Batavia Daily on the Wester Hotline. Yeah, the Commanders, they felt like go back, Josh, to when we were talking about the wild card weekend. It felt like they're cool. I give them maybe the best chance for like a rookie to win on the road of anyone, but I didn't anticipate this.
I did. Oh, I didn't anticipate this. No. I picked them to win, though.
I picked Tampa.
You wrote them off.
I picked Tampa. Yeah, because I picked, I think, all the favorites. But mm-hmm. I did not expect this. Even then, you look at the Detroit game.
Mm-hmm.
Even without the turnovers.
That one I was very surprised by.
But even without the turnovers early in that game, they were just mm-hmm. Detroit couldn't stop them. Daniels looked amazing. De'Ami Brown is a guy who I don't even think had over 40 receiving yards all regular season. In two playoff games, he got over 80 in both.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
I also think that I think he's going to be the next kind of interesting head coach conversation is Cliff Kingsbury, because I think he's a good coordinator, but I don't think he can do it as a head coach, at least right now. I think he should stay as a coordinator for a while, but a lot of teams are probably going to look at him and say, hey, he'd be a fun head coach for a rookie quarterback. Let's do that. Let's see what happens. Like, let's say the Raiders just get to him and go, hey, let's do Cliff Kingsbury.
Let's do this.
With a rookie quarterback. Let's see how that goes.
Lane Kiffin all over again.
Yeah, even though there's no good history behind that, because look what happened with him in Arizona.
I think that might be something, though, that really helps Daniels in Washington for a while, is Kingsbury's tenure in Arizona did not go particularly well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it gives him more time. Yeah, well, look at Kansas City with Spagnuolo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been able to keep him because his time in St. Louis was so bad.
Right.
I'm not saying, you know, Kingsbury was all of a sudden like a 2-14 coach. It's not that. But he had Kyler Murray. He had, you know, relatively good talent. And
DeAndre Hopkins.
And yet they got to one playoff game, and it was sort of a disaster. All of their offenses every year that he was there, really good in the first half, really bad in the second, or at least were declining in the second half. So that might be something for Washington where you might be able to keep Kingsbury for 2-3, maybe even more years, and really build a really, really solid foundation for Daniels to build what's already been an amazing start to his career. He has the best rookie season for a quarterback ever,
I think.
The numbers in terms of like passing touchdowns, no, there have been guys that have more passing touchdowns, more yards.
Mm.
But in terms of what he has meant for a franchise, and ultimately, and this could be just me, but because I do kind of value the playoffs more than literally anything else, maybe almost to a detriment, to get two playoff wins both on the road and to be in the NFC Championship your first year, this is going to be the worst roster Daniels has.
Yeah.
For the next 5-6 years.
And it's also interesting, too, because you look at – I remember when Eric Bieniemy went to Washington a couple years ago now.
Yeah, to coach Sam Howell.
Yeah and it was it wasn't that you expected things to work, but you kind of wondered how it was going to go because he had all of this – seemingly all of this success in Kansas City, and then it doesn't work out in Washington. And now Washington, boom, on their next guy,
mm-hmm.
kind of figure it out. And again, like you said, I think Kingsbury could be there for a while because of the fact that – one, he might be gun shy of, you know, being a head coach again. And teams might have the same feeling of like, I don't want to risk that because look what happened in Arizona. And Washington's just going to sit there and say, cool, thanks.
Yeah, you can stay here. We're going to get a new stadium. You're now working with a quarterback in Daniels, who is awesome. And you look around the rest of the NFC, by the middle of next year, you might have like unanimously, definitively the best quarterback in that conference.
Yeah, because that, oh, man, you want to talk about differences in conference. Look at the AFC to the NFC with the quarterback position.
Yep.
It is. Oh.
It is miles apart.
It's bad.
Some other NFC East news. Cowboys writer Clarence Hill Jr. tweeted this out about a half hour ago. Look for the Cowboys to cross the finish line on hiring Brian Schottenheimer no later than Friday, possibly today. Their OC the last 2 years interviewed them. They've now interviewed him for this head coaching position twice in the last 2 days. So I think that kind of felt definitive.
It's kind of crazy though. Like in 2 days you have two interviews. Like it's pretty quick.
And the first one was like 4 hours. So it was really like obviously already their offensive coordinator, so it really wasn't leaving, but
Right.
They found him quickly.
He's been an OC for 10 years.
Yeah. I think my issue is just they continue to beat to their own drum.
I'm sorry. No, he's been an OC for 14 years.
Oh, okay. So yeah, he's got a lot of experience. Never a head coach. Never. No. He beats to the Cowboys beat to their own drum. I mean, no one was putting them in like any of these other head coaching candidates except like Kellen Moore, Deion Sanders, and Brian Schottenheimer. Like those were the three guys. Mm-hmm. And Deion really never got off the ground after like the first 2 days.
That's also big though, because if Schottenheimer is going to be the next head coach of the Cowboys, that leaves Kellen Moore potential to go to the Saints.
Saints, Jaguars, something like that. Yeah.
I'm just thinking of avenues you can take away.
Joe Brady leaving.
Like
803-0550, the number two call. Going to stick on the Bills topic here, get more on the injuries and some of the other news in the NFL. Sal Capaccio joins the show next. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
First and 10 from the Kansas City 19-yard line. Josh takes shotgun snap, looks, steps up, has time, fires to the end zone, caught, touchdown, Buffalo! Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Gabriel Davis again! Are you kidding me? Unbelievable, the Bills get the lead back again.
Anniversary time!
Yay!
Oh, you can't have that attitude. You wanted this.
I'm the one that brought this up because I saw it on Twitter. I'm sorry, everyone. I thought it'd be fitting. I don't know. Now I hate
myself.
You heard
it, and your mood dropped instantly. You're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
All of the memories just came flooding back in from that night. So if anyone can't tell, 13 seconds was 3 years ago today. So that's fun. Man, what a time, right? Like what?
I mean, I can tell you what I was doing, because I'll never forget what I was doing when that touchdown pass happens. We got to bring on Scott Camacho here in a minute.
50 feet out there.
You were up there. At the time I was in the morning, so I was at home watching the game with my dad and my brother. As the Bills are driving, me and my brother look at each other and we're kind of like, you were at the perfect game. They'll be home if they win. Wink, wink. What do we do? Allen scores. I had tickets ready to buy. I was literally just waiting to see the end of the game.
So it's your fault.
Definitively see the end of the game. Kansas City starts driving. The moment it goes to overtime, I just will never forget closing my phone and like saying nothing to my brother. Me and him have never talked about it. But like I closed the phone out. I closed the app. We were done. That's my lasting impression of 13 seconds. On a happier note, let's go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins us. So, Sal, how are we doing?
Oh man, you guys, man.
I'm sorry. I didn't think it was going to hit as hard as it did, but man, it is.
Yeah,
it's riding high now.
Well, I've shared this story before, and I'll share it again. Because I think that, you know, it's time that we're turning the page this weekend on this, right? This is going to be, you know, I thought this morning even, if/when the Bills win Sunday, it'll never take away 13 seconds, but doesn't it really ease a lot of it? You know what I mean? Do you think like, okay, you can get by it a little bit more? For me, what happened was on the sidelines, the way it works is towards the end of the game, when the Bills are going to win, I start lining up who I'm going to interview for the post-game on-field interview for the radio broadcast. And I in a national game, I go to Tracy Wolfson or Evander Washburn, whoever it was. In this case, it was Tracy. And I say, who are you getting? And they always get Josh after the game. And we were doing that. And I said to Tracy, who are you getting? She said, Josh and Gabe. I said, great. And I started thinking about who I was going to want to talk to. And then the kickoff happened and then another play. And so I automatically start kind of like, ooh, I gotta wait here, see what happens, and then everything happened. But we were lining up everything we needed to do after the game, and then obviously everything changed. And I'll never, ever, ever forget walking off that field and the juxtaposition of emotions and watching. And here's Josh, who just played this unbelievable game, obviously, and he's walking off, and no one's really around him saying anything, right? Because he's walking off. Jordan Poyer was like crouched down, very emotional. I remember seeing him and walking up to him. Devin Singletary was on the bench, didn't move, just kind of had his arms sprawled on each side of the bench. And then I look over and there's Patrick Mahomes and all these cameras just following him, right? And like, it was just, it's a terrible, terrible feeling in that moment, right? And so I just said to you guys, oh, my, you know, don't go there. But, you know, hey, I think you also have to kind of remember those things and how much they meant to you to be on one side, to make it, you know, when you get a chance to be on the other side and how appreciative you are of how hard it takes to work to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I being back here during all that, too, I remember how quick the rest of the night went. Like, it went from all of a sudden it was, okay, the fourth quarter's ending, we're going to overtime, and then, like, you blink, and I'm in my car on my way home, like, 2 hours later, 3 hours later. Like, it was so fast how everything happened, and I've been thinking about that a lot for this game, too. Like we're all just kind of waiting all day for Sunday night, as the saying goes, but mm-hmm. how fast is this game going to go by when it actually gets to 6:30? You know, like, win or lose, like, it feels like one of those games where like you get so hyped up for it and then it happens and boom, it's gone like that. And that's kind of something that I'm trying to be mindful of as this gets closer, because I don't want to, like, you know, just kind of not necessarily gloss over the game, but then all of a sudden, like, you know, realize, wow, it's over, you know, win or lose. And it feels like one of those games are so like where there's so much hype and excitement around it that can kind of happen sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think last week and this week are very similar for me in this regard where, you know, my wife said to me last night, like, you know, how are you doing with everything? And I'm like, you just want to get to Sunday. I say the buildup is worse than the game itself. I say once I'm on the field and the game starts, it's a football game. You know what the stakes are, but you're playing. You're doing your job, right? That's what it is. You're doing your job and you're watching the game. And you know what the stakes are, but you also know that it's a long game. It's 60 minutes and it can go back and forth and a lot of different things can happen. And you're right. Once it's over, it's over. Now, I would say, if they do win this game Sunday, I don't think it's going to be a short night for you, you know, because there's a lot that goes on. And I remember in 2021, it was the year after COVID, but we weren't like the radio crew is now on the team, is on the team charter, right? In 2020, I did not go to the championship game. We did not call the game from Kansas City. We were in Buffalo. So I've not had a chance to be on site for a championship game since I was a fan, but not in this scenario. In 2021, we were traveling, but we couldn't be on the charter due to NFL regulations. So we were traveling commercially, right? And so we stayed back. Well, there was no flight out of Kansas City late that night. You weren't getting out from Kansas City to Buffalo. I remember staying in Kansas City that night, and the team flies back. And I honestly, in the hotel, and I'll never forget it, I woke up in the middle of the night, guys. It had to be 3 a.m. maybe. I'm in the hotel in Kansas City. And have you ever like woke up and thought, did everything just happen? Was that real? What just happened? Mm-hmm. Like, I really thought that. Like, it almost felt like, wait a minute, did that really happen? And then you realize, yep, I'm in Kansas City. That really happened. And that was like a second round of it for me.
Yeah. Oh, I can fully agree with that. I mean, saying I was working the mornings, getting up at 4 or 5 a.m. and I'm like, all right, that did happen. Like, it's going to be a long day now, and it's going to be a long off season. But like, see, yeah, like to your point, you brought it up too. Like, we're kind of turning the page. Like, it's another chapter in this rivalry. Yep. And I've mentioned it a lot this week too. It, there's no scientific point to it or anything like that. It feels different. 2020 was so fresh, so new for a lot of us, especially, you know, guys like me and Josh's age. We don't have the 90s. We had, you know, the stories from our parents or, you know, our relatives, what have you. So it was different. Now this feels like, okay, you've been here, you've done this, you're experienced. I know there's only, Josh, what did you say, like 14 players on the Bills that have played in the championship 14. Game.
But the Chiefs has 43.
Yeah, but us as fans, like, we've been here and through this. And it's just, it feels different to me. It really does. I think both these teams play so similarly. The difference is, I think the Bills are playing that style better. The records may not show it, but I think they are just playing better.
Yeah, I think this matchup, you know, we've seen the Bills win, you know, this year and even over the last couple of years. I know last year not in the playoffs itself. I think it can be a good matchup for the Bills in certain aspects. There's certain things that concern me. To your point about how they've played, I just read Thad Brown tweet this out, which is amazing. The Bills and Chiefs have combined for one giveaway since week 11 when they played. Combined. Since that game, there's been one giveaway. You know who that was? Josh Allen throwing an arm punt against the New England Patriots. That's it. Unbelievable. No turnovers for either side. And I really believe, guys, like this game, I do think that this game is going to be like kind of the Ravens game where at the end of the game, whoever loses, the talking point will be, I can't believe they made a couple mistakes that they haven't made. You know, Lamar had been really good at taking care of the football this year, but then he had two turnovers. And the talking point was, two turnovers and in the playoffs. And listen, Josh Allen has been great at protecting the football. Patrick Mahomes has been great at protecting the football. Both these offenses, their running backs, their receivers. Mark Andrews was too. For years, 5 years. And then he had the drops, but he had the turnover. And I do think that this game, whichever it comes down to, I think that whoever makes that one critical mistake is probably the team that's going to wind up losing. Don't let it be you to be the team that gives up the ball in a critical situation and stop a drive. I think that's what this game comes down to.
Yep, I am in complete agreement. On the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio. Sal, we did get our first injury report yesterday. It was, of course, a walkthrough. Just from what it looks like, pretty good news. Dawkins is kind of the different name. I don't think he was mentioned when Sean McDermott was speaking to you guys. He did miss with an illness yesterday. But Christian Benford, still in concussion protocol, but limited. Matt Milano, not really, I guess, a hamstring injury, more being called hamstring soreness. He was limited as well. So all in all, it seems, and then, of course, Taylor Rapp as well, day-to-day, did not practice. But it seems all in all, the first practice of the week, pretty good signs.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm more concerned with Taylor Rapp at this point for me personally, just kind of reading the report and reading how, trying to read the tea leaves, right? What Sean talks about and how he, I know he says day to day, but he didn't practice yesterday and he looked in a lot of pain. I was down there when he got out of the tent and he was in a lot of pain in that hip and he gets carted off and you know, that's tough. So I'm more concerned about that. Plus the fact that you have a rookie behind him who'd be playing against a Patrick Mahomes offense where they would probably attack that, right? We've seen the Bills give up a couple long passes recently. Last week, one to Rashad Bateman. The week before that, one to the Denver Broncos. So I think that concerns me. I'm not as concerned about Matt Milano for the fact that McDermott called it soreness, not an injury. And he was limited yesterday, nor Christian Benford as much, but obviously, concussion protocol, can you never know where that's going to go. So you always have to, you know, keep that in mind. But the fact that he was limited on Wednesday, you know, is good news. Hopefully, Deion Dawkins returns to practice today, though, guys. That is something to monitor. He did miss yesterday with an illness. So hopefully he's back as well today. We'll be down at One Bills Drive practice at 12:30 p.m. today. It'll be a regular practice, not a walkthrough like yesterday was.
And then, Sal, before we get you out of here, I do want to get your thoughts on some of the coaching and general manager hirings going on around the NFL. Josh McDaniels goes back to Old Faithful with the New England Patriots, a third stint as their offensive coordinator dating back all the way to 06. And then I think that maybe the most surprising thing of the offseason to this point, Jacksonville does a complete 180, fires Trent Baalke after maybe they're connected, maybe not. But after the news in the morning that Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator of Tampa Bay, pulling himself out of consideration, I mean, what's going on in Jacksonville? And I'm seeing Ian Rapoport, you know, mentioning 20 or so minutes ago, Joe Brady could be in line to go there potentially as a head coach.
Yeah, I've seen that as well, that Joe Brady is getting a little bit more love as far as the Jacksonville Jaguars and a head coach, you know, interview possibility. So we'll see. You know, this is what happens when you get down here and you have success and teams are still looking and searching. And, you know, well, it would be a great opportunity for Joe Brady, no doubt about it. You wouldn't love to see him leave the Buffalo Bills because of what he's done with Josh Allen and with this offense. And obviously, you know, if the Bills were to lose this weekend, then if the Jags are that interested, they could move on him. If not, they're going to have to wait. You know, and I think Joe Brady's handled this the right way so far all along. You know, last week, him and Todd Monken both had virtual interviews, the Ravens offensive coordinator, and a lot of talk was about distractions and things like that. You know, and right now, you know, Joe Brady, he wouldn't be able to interview this week. So, you know, his focus is on the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that if the Bills happen to win, good for Joe Brady to have that opportunity. And there's a couple weeks before, you know, the next game, which will be the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I wouldn't doubt if he is definitely in the mix there.
All right, Sal, we'll let you get ready for practice today, and we'll be listening for you tomorrow as well right here on the Extra Point Show. Thanks, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, you got it. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. And, yes, he also did bring up, too, with Dawkins missing with an illness, that is going to be something to monitor today. Right now I'm feeling pretty good about it, but if it's, you know, did not practice for a second day in a row due to an illness, I'll start to get a little bit nervous. 803-0550, the number two call. Going to take a quick timeout here before we take our next timeout. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour as the Sabres are back in action tonight, taking on the Calgary Flames, 9 p.m. start time, 8 p.m. pregame, both right here on WGR. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Weren't able to get connected to too many fans here in the second hour. We had Alex Brasky at 11, Sal Capaccio there in our last segment at 11:30. But when we do get connected, it's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We do have a Sabres game tonight. Does a 9 o'clock start time, Josh, fit into the Sabres after dark category?
Yeah.
You think
yeah,
so?
Okay. You're out west. Okay. You're playing Calgary. Like, it's...
It kind of also matters on the team you're playing, yeah, where it's like, it's Calgary.
It also matters the time of year, though.
Mm.
Well, actually, no. Never mind. It's never light at 9 o'clock during Sabres season. Never mind.
No,
take
that's
back.
Right.
It's always dark.
But so we're counting 9 o'clock as Sabres after dark?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because well, and also think about it, too. Think about, I think this conversation came up a few years ago, because I remember my rationale for what is and what isn't Sabres after dark. If the puck drop for the game happens after what would be the start of a normal third period in a 7 o'clock game,
okay.
Then it's Sabres after dark.
Okay.
Because Think about it. In a normal 7 o'clock game, you're probably already in the third period or about to start the third period at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's like the cutoff. 8:30, not Sabres after dark. It's like Sabres at twilight.
Sabres at twilight. Well, that's not going to catch on. I don't think it's going to catch on. Yeah,
no, I know it's not.
I completely understand the sentiment. I don't think Sabres after twilight is going
to
catch on.
Listen, I'm just trying to be an innovator, okay?
No, I think you're right,
You have to make wrong decisions to become an innovator.
That's right. You have to fail a few times. Yeah. You usually won't be respected in your day and age. It's usually after
first
you die.
First, you don't succeed. Whoa. All right.
No, yeah. It's like
Sabres after twilight is going to catch on in, what, 80 years now then?
Exactly. It's like Picasso.
All right.
Like, in your time, you're like, who's that Picasso guy?
It's just drawings.
And then, like, some random art students in the 1920s were like, this Picasso guy,
it's kind of cool.
It looks like a mess, but, like, I kind of like it. And then, boom, there you go. Da Vinci's, like, one of, like, the few guys I know that was, like, an inventor that, like, in their day and age was like, guy's onto something.
Yeah.
He's onto a lot, actually. Yeah,
well, but that's because nobody was making anything back then.
Yeah.
Like, think about it. Like, when there's nothing to make and someone's making something, you're like, hey, that guy's cooking.
That guy's doing something.
He's
over
doing
in
something
Venice.
Over there.
Sabres playing at 9 o'clock tonight against the Calgary Flames. They did win on Tuesday.
Yuri Kulik.
Yuri Kulik game. 3-point game. Scored as well against Vancouver, 3-2. Now they play tonight against Calgary. They also have a game on Saturday. That is not Sabres after dark. It's 4 o'clock in Edmonton. It's not a bad start time,
like
though,
that.
On Saturday.
That's also,
good.
Note on the Sabres from Elliot Friedman's 32 Thoughts. Supposedly, the Penguins are interested in some of the Sabres NHL-ready prospects. Again, that's from Elliot Friedman. Mm-hmm. Not naming names. There was no names mentioned in the article, but it's all you got so far in terms of trade chatter recently.
Love that for them. That's going to do it for me and Josh. Coming up next, more on the Sabres. Sabres Live on the way next. This is WGR.